You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to Ironcast. The Ginger Pele is back once more. We've got a very special guest this week, Ginge.
Massive.
Look at him.
One of my favourites.
I'm not just saying it because he sat there and he's my mate.
He says it whenever
he's
time.
He's one of my mates. Well,
then he always forgets me. Whenever he's doing his, you know, like his all-time 11s or whatever.
But I'll tell you one thing, though. If he goes on a night out, he never forgets me because he knows he has a good night.
There we go.
We'll leave it there, I think.
I was hoping you two would start two-footing each other. That's brilliant. Former West Ham United captain, current first-team coach, Kevin Nolan is a guest on the show this week. Yeah, so Kev, I heard you weren't best pleased that Ginge left you out of his first 11.
Oh, no.
You picked 1-11. You didn't even make the
I don't even think. You know when you're actually talking about midfielders, I didn't even get a mention.
Not even, so in the conversation.
Like, mention.
You were in there.
Oh, it's my best skipper.
Yeah. Love this guy.
Well, you know, you were in there, and it made it worse because Kev put me in his 11. So I was sat there thinking,
yeah, because I didn't have no many centre halves to play with.
No half decent ones, anyway.
I thought we could kick off, Kev. I mean, he's disrespected you there, leaving you out. I wondered if you could tell a Ginger Pele story. Could you tell a Ginger Pele story?
We've got a few out. There's not ones where I could share on this podcast.
Yeah, we need to be careful.
Listen, it was a fantastic time. That time when, you know, we had Ginge, obviously Knowles was the vice captain then. We had a good bunch of British English lads who were all just really close, stuck together, wanted to fight on and off the field. You know what I mean? It was great, but we'd done it for the passion and the reason that we wanted West Ham to be better. We believed that we could make them better, and I think we had some really good seasons here because of that. You know, because of that sort of mentality of togetherness and knowing that your mate would do anything for you. And yeah, you know, I'd said that Andy Carroll, Carton Cole, you know, the characters what we had in the dressing room was, yeah, sometimes it was hard to handle being the captain, but
it's lovely to hear from you, but I'm not just saying it because you sat there. All that come from you though, didn't it? I think looking back at those times, I remember my first day coming back when I came back from Villa. I don't think we'd played against each other, but I don't think we had met. I remember I walked into the medical room, first person I bumped into was Kev. And it was like I'd met you before. It was mate straight away, and you could just tell. I'm not just saying it because he's here. It was all because of him. The team spirit we had in that team, the players we were sort of attracting. Obviously, you was close with Big Sam. Players we were getting in, all fitted into the way we played and the dynamic of the football club at the time. And it was.
And you look at it. The year Sam left, we were. I think at Christmas we were around the top four. I think we were actually third. Wow. Coming around Christmas, and then all the news broke that Sam would be leaving at the end of the season. And it sort of. The season's just sort of pitted out. Whereas, you know, I always felt if that would have been built on just at that moment, who knows what could have happened? You know, because we believed that we should be up there. But because of that, you know, Sam sort of took his eye off the ball. You know, he starts looking a bit different. Everything, you know, you realise he's not going to be here this next season. Who's going to be here? Who's going to be leaving? And it was such a shame, because that year I thought we had the credentials to have a real good season and finish in a good enough spot to be there or thereabouts.
The top of the Premier League is a far cry from what you inherited as club captain when you came in 2011. You were a club captain at Newcastle in the Premier League. You dropped down a division to join West Ham United, and we'd just been relegated after the Avram Grant years. So, yeah. I mean, when you came in, you must have seen an enormous undertaking. It was a big job to be done at West Ham when you joined, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, I was never afraid of a challenge. And I think because Sam was, you know, spearhead, and I won't deny it, it was a massive, you know, attraction to me. But then when I spoke with David Sullivan and the passion he showed me and what he wanted and what he was expecting, I remember walking into his house, and I don't know if you've been to Mr. Sullivan's house, but it is absolutely gigantic, humongous. The room where you actually waiting room is bigger than my whole house, if you like. And yeah, it was just like surreal. And then I walk into his office and obviously get introduced, and then it was just the fire and the passion. What he showed me was like, oh yeah, I've definitely made the right move here. Even though I knew I was leaving a fantastic club up behind, I knew I was joining another one, and I wanted to come and go, yeah, I can do this. And that was it. From day one, I just sort of laid out that no matter what, we'll be back in the Premier League next year. And if any of the lads weren't with me, then they'd be told, or, you know, they'd be booted in training and want to go at some point. So, and that's what Sam entrusted me with. You know, he trusted with me being able to manage the dressing room, if you like. And he trusted my instincts in players, because there was a lot of players here who were under a bit of scrutiny. You know, they'd just been relegated. They took a bit of stick on social media. It wasn't as much as what it is now. But, you know, then it was still hurting them. But, we, you know, there were some players who made real positive contributions that year. You know, Julian Faubert, for instance, when we come, you know, there was lots of talk about him wanting to leave, being a really bad egg in the dressing room. And he was the total opposite. Great lad. You know, I got on really well with him. He made really positive contributions throughout the season, whether he made 5-6 appearances here and there, or just made, you know, but was a good lad around to have around. And it's just, you know, when you're actually, people are talking about things, yeah, and you know yourself, James, isn't it? Yeah. Everyone just likes to create a story when they don't really know the story. And it just gets worse and worse.
It's mad how you see, yeah. Kev's hit the nail on the head there. How often you see people talking from the outside. I've gone to clubs and people said about players, oh, he's this, he's that. And you get there and they're great lads. Yeah. And you're just thinking, oh, people have a preconception of players, yeah, from the outside, the press or whatever, about players who are at a football club, and they haven't got a clue. You get there and they're great lads. We've had loads, haven't we, yeah, along the years. Yeah, I was going to say to you, Kev, that first, when you first come in with Big Sam in the Championship, did you in the dressing room, get any feeling off some of the boys, thinking, right, he's Big Sam's boy. You can't say too much about him. No,
it's going to get straight back to the boss. We had Scotty Parker, who had just, like, he was the captain, and I've just took the captaincy off him because there was lots of, you know, talk of him leaving. You know, I think he wanted to get out. He wanted to be back in the Premier League, which I understood. I've just left the Premier League, but I was coming for a different reason. He wanted to get back into the Prem. So we knew that was happening. You know, the gaffer had said that. So I had the talk with Scotty to say, like, you know, there's no hard feelings. I'll always be here. And I said to the lads, look, I haven't come in here to be a spy. I'm not a spy. I'm not his man.
It's weird that you have to say that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But did Scott Parker have a jacket on at this point?
Exactly what a spy would say.
Scotty obviously loved his dress sense. And then it was just funny because you just seen, like, nose right behind, yeah, him. You know what I mean? Exactly the same.
Scott Parker was the only man to come into training at Chadwell Heath at the time, which was Porter Cabins, in sometimes a full suit. Suit jacket, like he was going out in London. And then Nobes was young at the time. A couple of weeks before Scotty come in, he'd come in a tracksuit. All of a sudden, Nobes is coming in suit jacket. Hang on a minute, what's going on here?
Oh yeah, so it was hard sort of trying to get, you know, their trust quickly. But it did take time, and I knew that was going to happen, you know, because ultimately I come in as Sam's guy. But I'm sure when we, probably after the first couple of weeks, when we had our first ruption, when we were going at each other, and then I'd backed him over a couple of players, you know, who he was having a go at, and I'd sort of stepped in and gone, like, nah, like, he's done right and whatever. They sort of start to think, aye, no, he is one of the lads. He is one of the
I would say, I know, yeah, you had a great relationship with Sam, but Kev, you were probably the only person who could say that to Sam. Yeah. Everyone else would be sat in the dressing room like, oh, don't pick on me, boss. And then Kev would just say it for you. And that's why he was a great skipper.
Yeah, and I think that was it. I think it took that time, but I think they realised then that Sam entrusted me and he trusted my say-so, if you like, within that. And sometimes I'd like go and see him after the game or after something's happened, and he'd give me a rollicking on my own. Don't do that, don't do this. You know what I mean? And I knew where my line was, right, because he was the boss, and he is, you know, I still call him Gaffer now to this day, because he was fantastic for me throughout my career and everything else. And, you know, I love him for that. You know, I've got such a respect for him off the field. He's a great man. He's great to be around. You know, the respect what my family have for him. So for me, he knew that he had that my respect, and I would never, ever overstep that mark.
Yeah.
But I always had the lads back when I thought that it was the right time. And, you know, he probably went too far, which sometimes he probably said, and Ginge will tell you. But, you know, some of his rants were absolutely iconic, aren't they? And brilliant, yeah. You know, just things you can't.
I used to love with Sam. Say we'd go and we'd lose, and we'd go 1-0 down, and he'd slide down his seat a little bit. And then you'd look over, we were 2-0 down, and he'd get a bit further down his seat. You're thinking, oh no, this is going to be epic at half time or full time. And then he'd cross his arms, and you think, I don't want to go in at half time.
Half time, we're getting it here.
But again, on the other hand, yeah, played well for him.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing to say about Big Sam is he is big, he's massive, he's scary when you meet him, and when you realise that's the guy, you see him angry on the touchline. Yeah. If you're in a dressing room with him and he's 4 foot away from you screaming, it must be a scary thing, right?
Well, I've been pinned up by him. I got pinned up by him in my early career, when I was at Bolton, only 17, 18, I think I was. I must have been 18 then. No, 19 I was, because we were in the Prem. And obviously, he was just, it was a Thursday. And he was just trying out a few things, and I wasn't in the 11, which was obviously starting, or I thought was starting. So I'm like,
you've got the ump in training.
I've got the ump in training, and it obviously showed. I thought I was being clever, like, you know, and I didn't think he'd got onto it. And then he just went to, can I see it afterwards? Like, just dead chilled out, and I was thinking, yeah, you can, because I'm gonna.
I'm ready for you.
Yeah, you can. I'm gonna be asking why I'm not playing, right? So I've like. I'm thinking, ah, oh, here we go. I'm gonna put it on him, yeah. Like, I'm fuming. I'm raging. I've walked into the office before I could even sit down. He's got me walloped right up against the wall. Don't you ever, ever, ever toss one of my sessions off ever again. I'm warning you, lad. Don't you ever do it again. I'm like that. Like, yeah. Feet up. I'm obviously 6'3", like skinny as you like then, you know. And like, I'm like, of course, Gaffer. No, I'm coming to say sorry. absolutely melted right in there. I was thinking, got out of there all right.
I remember going into a similar sort of situation. I remember going in to see him, like, wasn't playing, and you go in, boss, you know, any reasons why I'm not playing? And you used to go into Sam, and it's all calm, like Kev says. You'd sit in front of him, and you'd say his bit, and you'd walk back out, and you'd go, I'm not sure I've got any answers then. Yeah. I still don't know why I wasn't playing.
But he's right.
I can't say nothing.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Gaffer.
Cheers, boss. Cheers. Yeah, you're bang on. You're bang on, boss. Yeah. You're bang on.
Kev, you've been involved in two of the best moments in probably the last 20 years of West Ham history, the playoff final in 2012, how that first season of Big Sam ended, and of course Prague, which we'll get on to. But 2012, how was it for you? How was it to be inside of those celebrations? Yeah.
The tension
of a day like that.
It's quite interesting because we watched it. During the summer, it was on. You know, like, they have the retro games and that, and it was on. And I started getting goosebumps about it again because, you know, when you see yourself walking out and all that, and then me little boy now, he's 13, he's getting it all, he's loving it. West Ham mad he is now. Sonny, he's like, he's gone, so what happened? And I remembered every little bit. This will happen now.
Your first time watching it back?
Because I very rarely watch myself back, if you like. I watch loads of games of everyone, players, everything. Quite funny, because when we were in Australia not so long ago, a fella was asking me to sign all these, like, pictures. Australian fella, obviously, just got loads of pictures of me celebrating goals and all that. And I was like, yeah. And one of the media staff was with me, and I was going, oh, that was that one. Yeah, I remember that goal. I scored that one against them.
It
was like, and it was just like, you know, going back. So, yeah, going back to the championship final, I sort of knew that year when I left Newcastle going to West Ham, that was what I had to do. And it was like, the focus was, we need to get up. But I remember, when I was sitting there just watching it, the actual relief.
Yeah,
I remember when the whistle, when that goal went in, when Vaz Tay scored, and then there's a moment when JC gets caught in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah. Tries to rugby tackle.
Right. And he's trying, and you, if you could actually see me, Knowles, and everybody at him at that point, he knew he was like, if that would have happened, he would have got killed in the dressing room and from either one of the players or definitely Big Sam. But you know, like, you remember that now as a funny part of it. But the moment that whistle blew, the relief to go, we're back where we belong.
After relegation, they rebuilt, they reinvigorated, and reinvested as well. And now, West Ham are returning. More than a club, it says on those T-shirts. Well, this is more than just a playoff win for West Ham United. They're back amongst the elite of English football. Their first visit to the new Wembley has yielded their first win at the new Wembley. Mission accomplished.
I've done what I set out to do, get them back there, and now we've got to, now the next, it was just sort of switch. Now the next step, we've got to establish ourselves again back in the Premier League. We're not going back down, you know, because it's the hardest thing, getting yourself back up, but then you're staying up, you know what I mean? And but we realised we had a decent enough squad, and then adding these lads, as we were going along, we realised then that we were only going to get better. But that moment, like, just, I remember it, and because it's quite an heavy cup, and if you watch it, I just throw it with one hand. like is it like it's got not weight in it.
I love the fact, like, that you remember everything about the game, but probably not for don't remember like 3 weeks after the game. I would say after that relief of getting back. I know you're not a nervous person, Kev, but nervous before, was that probably the most nervous I could imagine?
I could imagine. It was a nice nervous, you know what I mean? Because you want to be excited. Part of them games, you know what I mean? I was excited. We were at Wembley, you know. I thought we'd done Blackpool in the two games quite handsomely, 4-0 in the league, felt like real confident going into the game. And then the next minute you're like, pow, they've had all these chances, and you're like, right, we've got to start working our way back into this. And we did, and settled it down. And I just, Vaz Tejas has a big chance.
He misses a lot, actually. Half. When you watch it back, I watched it the other day, and I was like, Vaz Tejas gets a lot of chances in that game.
Yeah, he got a lot of opportunities. And I think I think it's just after Coley scores, we get another chance with him on the back, on the far post on the left hand side, and he scuffs his chance. And I think if he would have scored that, I think it would have become
more comfortable.
It would have been more comfortable for us. And but obviously, they hit us really early in the second half. You know, all the things what Sam would have been saying to us at half time: don't concede. You know, first 15 minutes, get through that, settle the game down, then start playing your game. Get yourselves back in their half and punish them. And obviously that goes out the window after, I think it's a minute, isn't it?
I actually watched that game on a Matty Evenden stag do in Miami. I'll never forget it, because Chelsea won the Champions League that night Drogba scored the header in the last minute.
So
party, and you were under all that pressure, and I was watching it around the pool in Miami
thinking, yes, here's my next,
here we go.
You nearly score a worldie in that game, didn't it? Hit the bar,
gets a touch to it. Coming over, and I just thought, I mean, and then I had the side foot winding, like the volley, side foot volley. I had that on tap. Yeah, that was like, that was my thing.
Taylor, McCartney, Nolan off the crossbar, followed in by Taylor. What a moment that would have been. Well, that's all it takes, Blackpool. That is all it takes. One moment of real quality.
When I hit it, I thought goal right away. Like, and if you watch it really closely, he just gets a little touch, and because actually where it actually hits the bar, I think if he hasn't got the touch, it's sort of going to be a Ian Bower.
That's what I've got in my head anyway.
That's what he tells everyone.
Outside
Wembley of you now,
playoff history.
But
look, I could tell the way you're talking about it. Great memories, like the smile on your face as you're talking about it. I mean, I can only imagine what it was like after.
Yeah, it was great. Well, to be honest, all the lads were shooting off. Knowles was getting married that year to Carly. Yeah. So he was going off on a stag do. He was off to, I don't know, I think he went to Vegas.
I got the invite for that.
I didn't know. Scotty was on that way.
We didn't dress smart enough for Knowles and stag do.
I remember he got off, and I hired a big coach for all my family to come down from the north. And then hired out to the Waltham Abbey.
Cool, like, I bet that was quiet. Nice civilized meal, Kevin.
Like,
was it?
Yeah, the, what, did you get like a function room?
Yeah, I had a function room. Yeah,
when the Nolans get together, yeah, it is carnage.
Did you get a DJ and all that?
No, we all think we're DJs. We all think we can sing. So it was, yeah, but it was brilliant. Obviously, all the lads, like, we look back now, and obviously it was like 10 years ago last year. So on the memories of everyone who, on Facebook and all that, they were all sending me the pictures. That. You know, all my cousins, people who I haven't seen like for years because of COVID and stuff, saying, remember this day. And I remember that day I hired the England coach for them to come down. So they had the England coach coming down. England hadn't even used it yet. So
England had get on it like the next week, and it's like the fridge is full of like Stella. And,
and then we did. And so obviously the next day after the final, we stayed in the Marriott that night, all the family. And then the next day that picked us up to take us back up to Liverpool. And it was just straight to Liverpool and then straight to the local. And it was just party for a few days before we, you know, get back on it, because I knew the Prem was coming. But it was just nice to, you know, share them moments with my family. And because all the lads, because you're there a bit later, all the lads are just shooting off everywhere, so you can't really get that chance to enjoy it. So we didn't experience the after party, and we didn't have an after party, but yeah, we certainly did as a family, which was nice, because I'd been through a lot. You know, I moved away from my missus. Me and my missus were living, you know, we'd just had Sonny, who'd just been born that year, so he was only two. So there was a lot, you know, which a sacrifice to come down here and lived on my own for the year. I lived in Canary Wharf, which was, it was beautiful. Don't get me wrong. And I love Canary Wharf. But
not quite Bolton.
Yeah, but I didn't ever live in Bolton, you see, because I lived in Liverpool. And I remember when I left Bolton to go to Newcastle, it was like one of them last day of the window. I didn't even ring me missus and say I've been sold. I just walked into the bed and she was going. I remember for Christmas I got her a box for the Pussycat Dolls because they were massive at the time. So her and her mates were all in ours as I got home, getting ready to go today. And I've walked in and gone, I'm going to Newcastle. And she's gone, what? And I'm going, yeah, I'm going to Newcastle. And she's like, what do you mean? I went, yeah, I've been sold. I'm going to Newcastle. And she was like, and obviously it hadn't
just
triggered.
Dropped that
and then she's like out the window, like as I'm getting in the car. What, like, you're not coming back? And I was like, probably not for a while, no. And then I didn't see them, you know, so it, like, people don't see that side of it, you know.
Yeah.
She's got our Jasmine, our Jasmine was a baby then, you know what I mean? Like, literally, and now she's just got to basically leave a job, because she was a nurse at the time, leave a job, move up. She might have been probably pregnant, or did she just...
Did Hayley move up the road with you? Up to
she moved, and then she come up, but we couldn't find her house for ages, so I was in the Jasmine Dean hotel for about 3 months trying to find one. Then we finally found it. Then she sort of settled. We had real good mates like Steve Harper, one of my best mates in footy, you know, similar to Ginge and his missus, the way our girls get on well, really. The kids all, you know each other, got on really well. We were on holiday with them when we found out that, you know, West Ham wanted me. And she's like, I'm not moving. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to.
You
can imagine the mate. Ginge will tell you, like, my missus, you know, she can put her foot down, so we can have a good
old... The only person I know Kev really answered to is Hayley.
And yeah, so then I come down, so I did sacrifice a lot, but I knew that, you know, it was the right thing to do. I knew that I wanted to.
All worked out.
Yeah, and so that, when I was just talking about that relief and the release, you know, and then obviously Hayley moved down here. She loves it down here. Now the kids love it. Obviously they're back in Nottingham now because we moved here. And then I come back down here, so that hasn't got down too well, but... Yeah, look, it is what it is. But yeah, what an absolutely fantastic day and then evening, and then, you know, to spend with the family and enjoy the fact that I'm going to be back in the Premier League and to probably, because I remember and I speak with Adrian Durham actually quite a lot, who's Talk Sport, and me and my brother were in the car as I was coming to sign for West Ham, and he was hammering me because how can you just score 12 goals in the Premier League? You've been one of the best midfielders. You're now writing yourself off going down to the Championship, going to West Ham, who were in tatters, you know, like, you know, the way he used to go, and he's reeled it all off. And I was like, and my brother's like, I'm going to ring him. Now, our Ginge will say, right, my brother would have a fight in an empty house, you know what I mean? He'd argue with himself in an empty house. He's wanting to ring him up. I'm going, leave it. I'll get me time. And then obviously in time, me and Adrian, shall we say, thingy our differences. I've done drive with him a couple of times, which is quite good.
Talking about radio shows like that, I remember when I was a kid coming through at Cardiff, and there was a, you know, local radio show on back there as well. Like, and I was coming through, and they used to call me Jamie Collins every time on the radio.
I can imagine what's going on.
You tune in, you know, when you're buzzing, you play the game, you tune in. I'd have all the family around, and they'd go Jamie Collins.
And my mum used to get the raving amp. She went, I'm phoning him. Like drive time, do you know what I mean, in Cardiff? I'm phoning him. I was about 16, long ginger barn at the time. Thinking I was a bit of a boy, just got in the team. My mum and I phoned him, like, mum, you can't do that. You can't do that.
She went, probably.
She phoned him up and went, hello, this is Kay. This is James Collins's mother here. I'm just phoning up to tell you I christened him James, not Jamie, and I'd appreciate him if you called him by his name. And put the phone down. Live on the radio in Cardiff. And I had to go into the training ground the next day. They were all like, oh, no. Really? But it worked. They called me James from then on.
Well, Ginger went on to me.
All right, West Ham fans. One way you can support Ironcast and help us rocket up the charts and beat off the competition from other official football clubs podcasts like Chelsea and like Spurs is to get a 5-star rating or review from you. Support me and Ginger on the podcast, chuck us a 5-star rating and review, and help us rocket up the charts where West Ham belong, at the top of the table. Back on with the show.
We left West Ham as a player in 2015, come back in 2020, and we've just experienced one of the highlights of my entire life supporting West Ham, that magnificent night in Prague. How did the celebrations compare, 2012, 2023?
Oh, wicked. Absolutely brilliant, because we were together. The team was together afterwards, you know, and it was really good. And we went back to the hotel with all our families there, friends. So we were all there. We had a bit of food, drinks, everything, you know, all the singing and all that type of stuff. And then we headed back to our hotel, where it ended up being just me, Nose and Dech, which was quite a nice moment.
And the trophy?
We weren't interested in the trophy at that point.
We'd won it, hadn't we? So.
And look, it was just nice. Obviously, three captains, you know, just sitting there, sort of chewing the fat, talking about everything, remembering all the good things.
I know we're talking about after the game. Yeah. What are you, do you remember the game? I know you're unbelievable at remembering stats and stuff like that. Yeah. Do you remember
I remember when they scored, and everyone, it was like, I remember it was like, everyone was like, as if we'd gone 1-0 down 2-0 down, and it'd gone from us. And I was like, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Let's, you know, let's sort of refocus. And we were quite calm on the bench and everything else, and sort of try to get that across to the lad. Like, you know, relax, we've got this, you know. And when you're looking for moments of, you know, genius and someone to just play that proper pass, and then obviously the one who you want on the end of it is a Jared Bowen. And I remember as soon as he's played the ball, and then Jared scores, someone shouted offside, and the gaffer always comes and looks at me and goes, offside. And I go, no way.
No chance.
I've gone right away, no chance. And I've gone, oh, am I going to be wrong here? And like, you know, in that little dread. And then I've like, because in the conference, it's not as like in the Prem where you get the repeat right away. You're waiting. And I'm like that. So I'm thinking,
Don't get this wrong.
The gaffer was off. I was a little bit concerned that you couldn't keep up with the gaffer, to be honest. Did he wait for you to say yes before he celebrated?
Nobody's come back, and he's giving it. He's going, it's on side, isn't it? It's on side, definitely.
Yeah.
I can't thinking. Oh,
Gaffer's just done a sprint for like 50 yards, comes back, and is offside. Imagine that.
Both armies. But yeah, so like just them moments, you know, and like it was just it sort of just went back to the playoff final, because it was like last minutes scoring that goal, and it's just like, now see it out, you know what I mean?
Said it, Kev. I've said it on here. I think the first one we did, speaking to Gerard about it, we don't do that. West Ham don't score last minute goals and win games and hang on. And the extra time seemed like I was in the stand that night. It just seemed like it went on forever. But I remember turning to all the West Ham fans in the crowd going, I think I was more shocked we scored a last minute goal, because I certainly never happened when I was playing, as in like, like scoring in such a big game and all that. Yeah. And just the relief and the feeling in the stand. God knows how you guys felt down on the pitch, but it's the first proper game I'd been to in the stand, like big game supporting West Ham. And it was just unreal, unreal night.
Yeah, we've had so many amazing European nights. We're about to hit our third season in a row European football, not just the final, the semis we've been through. And how have you found those European nights? Are there any moments stick out for you?
The night in Frankfurt was fantastic. You know, just that experience of them and what they were. Obviously, we were disappointed because we felt that we had an opportunity that year, you know, and we weren't going to let it go again last year, you know, because we thought we were better than Eintracht Frankfurt. And we let ourselves down a bit, I think. And I think we wanted to learn from that. And we go into every game, you know, I certainly believe that we can beat anyone on our day, whether it be in the Premier League or in across Europe. And we wanted to keep giving the lads the belief. And it was different last year because we brought in a lot of European players. So it sort of changed, you know, because we had a lot of British-based players who'd sort of left the building, and a lot of European lads who hadn't experienced Premier League football, but had done the European side and, you know, played in them games. So it felt like when we were coming to them games, that felt like that was easy, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it was trying to get them lads to get adjusted to them playing in a Premier League intensity, you know, the athleticism you've got to show to go against the Premier League, because I think like physicality and all that type of stuff, it is, you know, up here compared to the rest of Europe and what's expected each week in, week out after that Thursday game. So it was a big adjustment for a lot of them lads, and I think that's why you're seeing probably the best of them coming into the end of the season and then them sort of adjusting to what was it, you know, a tough season for us in the Prem. And we're hoping now they've adjusted, we're going to be able to now keep building and get better for the Premier League, as well as be able to, you know, establish ourselves across Europe again, because I mean, I'm certainly thinking that, you know, we want to get back to the latter stages again. We've got to be a club who gets to the latter stages, and we're serious with the quality we have in the squad. You know, obviously we've lost Deck, but if we can bring the additions in, what we're looking at, and I feel that we can sort of dream and, you know, look forward to that and really believe that we can do it.
Yeah, Kev, speaking to you about captaincy, and obviously I say it all the time, and again, you're not, because you're sat next to me, one of the best captain I worked for. I got to speak to you about Gary Speed, obviously both close with him, and obviously an absolute travesty, and still get upset mentioning his name now. But what sort of, I know we've spoke about it off air and personally, what sort of influence did Speedo have on you, captaincy-wise and
massive,
as a man? And
massive, mate, massive. On and off the field, he was massive for me, because I was the youngest captain in the Prem ever to be named as a club captain, but Speedo was obviously in the dressing room. And I remember I actually captained Bolton when we first come up at Liverpool at Anfield. All the Goodney Bergson sat out. Someone else had sat out, the vice captain. I remember sitting there, and I and the gaffer had let me stay at home the night instead of being in the hotel. And I'd just come for pre-match, and I was sitting there, and all the lads had gone back up to the room, and I was just sitting there waiting. It was New Year's Day, playing Liverpool away. You know, the way like the analyst will go, who's doing the team sheet or whatever, he'll go, hey, you know, who's going to be the captain? Gaffer, and he's looked and he's gone, Nobby.
And is that just because you were sat there?
No, because obviously I think because the Liverpool thing, he's just gone, Nobby can be here today. And he's gone, do you fancy it, lad? And obviously, I've been a captain with all my school teams, I was captain of the reserves, captain of the youth team at Bolton and everything. So I went, yeah, right. And he went, but I thought he was joking. And he went, no problem, lad. And then obviously, we got to the Anfield, and then got named captain. We drew 1-1, scored, and Gerrard scored, and then I scored to make it 1-1 right in front. And I remember that it was one of them, mm-hmm. like, and always remember I've got the picture, and like Michael Richards is standing behind me, just pointing at it. And it was such a proud moment. And I remember then, like, I was sort of fam, like, well, he trusted me with that. So I always thought I am going to end up being, I want to be club captain for Bolton. And I remember JJ was captain at the time. And JJ it was after that unbelievable season he'd had. And he'd had a tough time with injuries, not really getting to the height of where he was. So wasn't playing a lot, wasn't involved a lot. And then Speedo was obviously the vice captain. And then Speedo got injured for a couple of games. And I just walked in one day, and I was 22, going to turn 23. And it was, everything was like laid out on my peg to be captain. And I went on a ridiculous run of like a couple of goals, like playing out my skin. And I remember we were at Charlton away. As we come in, the gaffer, like Speedo's back in the team. And I obviously just thought Speedo would become captain. I'll be like the assistant whenever he's not playing, and everything was still like fingered up on my peg. And I don't know if the gaffer had spoken to Speedo about it or not, or whatever. And I've gone, looked at Speedo and gone, is that right? And he's gone, yeah, you deserve it, mate.
Brilliant.
And you know the way he just like, so I don't know if he knew it was coming. I don't know whether, and now, and I remember just feeling like, I'm 100 feet taller. He just said, like, Gary Speed just said to me, who's our captain? And, like, I remember just shivers, but I was like, you are, like, the best fella ever. You know, like, wanted to cuddle him. And he is one of them players, but, like, nothing fazed. And he, the way he was, the way he handled it, everything. And then, obviously, the gaffer called me in that Monday. We beat Charlton. I scored. Played really well. But Speedo was brilliant. And I just remember on the Monday, and, me and Speedo used to stay behind. And I think it was the year of the Ashes, 2005. Mm. So it was like, we used to stay behind. He taught me all about cricket. He loved cricket.
Unreal, wasn't he?
He was brilliant at cricket as well. And, like, obviously, Simon Jones was Welshman. We were doing really well for England at the time. And, like, he would sit there and I'd watch the Ashes with him. And at that time, I didn't have a clue. I used to think, what a bad sport this is. But, no, and, like, obviously, he's telling me this is what's happening, this is what they're looking at. And, like, that's where my love for cricket comes through him. Yeah. Because he taught me how to sort of play it and visually watch it and enjoy it. Yeah, we become close. And, like, again, his missus really close with my missus. When we go out on Christmas parties, all that. And then, yeah, obviously...
He was just so calm to be around, wasn't he? And when Speedo spoke, everybody listened.
Yeah.
Like, I can only speak about it at Wales. Obviously, he was my captain when I first got in the Wales team, and then he went on to be manager. And he just had the calmness and everything he spoke was sense, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then obviously he had a massive influence on me, but obviously playing with him, I don't think I've ever really spoke to you about it.
Yeah, just being side by side with him, Ginge, like, it was just, you know, it was just so nice when you know you've got... You know, we had Fernando Hierro playing for us. We had Ivan Campo, JJ Kocher. I'm captain of all these boys. Team. You know, I'm captain. You know, Stanios Giannakopoulos, he was captain of Greece. You know, JJ was captain of Nigeria. Speedo was captain of Wales. You know, we had all these players who were international stars. Ricardo Cardin, captain of Jamaica. And the youngest lad in the team is the captain of all these lads. And I remember Mike Ford, who's a great, great lad, sports psychologist, who we worked lots with, because I worked with psychologists throughout my career. Not for... anything else, but to sort of give me visuals and goals and everything else, and it was brilliant for that. He put me in touch with Graeme Smith. Remember the South African cricket captain? He was the youngest, and he had all Jack Callis. He had all them. So me and him would meet up, like, you know, every three months when he was touring England and all that. We'd meet up for a coffee, just go through how you deal with certain things. So he was another one who was a real big influence. He probably doesn't remember Graeme, you know what I mean? But he was good for me.
That's mad though, Kev, because that's ahead of his time for back then.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about stats and stuff like that. And that's another thing. Sam was great. Yeah. I hadn't really seen anything like that. But you doing that as a player back then is years in front of what I knew. Anyway, I didn't realise you was doing all that.
Yeah. So even here, you know, because we had Lee, didn't we? And I used to, all the time. Because it was something, because I always wanted to sound off and, you know, and just... thinking about things and how I manage lads and what I do and did I do that right, you know, and if I had an argument with one of the players, how would they handle it the next day and stuff like that. And, you know, if kicked someone in training and we've had a little bit of a shrug, I'm the captain. I don't really want to keep that going, you know what I mean? So to try and find out, you know, what do you think about this? How do you think about him? You know, I've just had a bit of a dust up with Ginge. Like, me and him would probably chat that night or whatever, but if I didn't really know Ginge, it's like, how would they then handle it? If you know what I mean. So it was all them little things which I always wanted to get advice off people, but I wanted it from someone who wasn't looking at it in a perspective of, oh, it's all about football. Oh yeah, we're in it, and we're, you know, like how we look at it. And I think that was like an influence off Speedo, because Speedo was the one who was sort of, he was all right. You know, he spoke with Fordy quite a lot, quite openly, and that was like sort of drawing me to Fordy and then to keep on with that. So it was just such a shame, you know, when we got that phone call that he had, you know, took his life. So when we did get that, I was thinking, like, you've got all these boss influences. He's been a boss influence on my, you know, unbelievable influence on my career and my life. Like, why hasn't he just called one of us? And, you know, and there's like so many people like that who he had and who considered themselves great mates of his, you know what I mean? And we just can't get our head around it. And like the funeral, you know, I carried Gary's coffin at the funeral, which obviously was a great honour for me, but it was just one of the saddest things I've had to do, you know. And that's like, I've lost, you know, grandparents and stuff, but, you know, to lose one of your, you know, biggest pals in football and, you know, someone who you really truly love and respect, it was such a difficult time. And that was like when I was down here on my own. That was the first year when we won the championship, so that was 2012. that was that year. So it was like, it was tough. And I remember my mum and Ailey really worrying about me being on my own down here. And I was like, nah, don't worry, I'm all right. And but it was a difficult time. So handling them things was really tough, yeah.
We're interviewing you now, just fresh off of training. And I wondered, like, how much is, like, the influence of Gary Speed, Big Sam, all those years you spent as captain, all those leadership, are those things kind of in your mind when you're out there on the training pitch and you're working with the lads now? Is it all those influences, like?
Most definitely, yeah, because, you know, obviously Sam, as he said, he was way ahead of the time. So you're always looking to try and refresh, to help the lads, to give them something. Speedo was one of them. I remember when I first spoke to him and he was getting the Wales job, and he was saying, and he went to, I've got to change the whole mentality of it. He said, like, and he was part of that mentality. Like, he was part of it because he had all the best stories of him, Cookie, John Arton, you know, all them lads who are going out, having the fun nights, getting out, being out a bit too late than what they should have and all that type of stuff. And he come in, stopped his drinking, didn't he? Yeah. He stopped everything.
He, like, changed it all.
Changed it all. Like, literally from what he was as a captain and as a player and with that camaraderie, he went, no, this is it. We are going straight down. And I remember him saying, I went, but that, isn't that a bit like, isn't that going to be a bit like two-faced? Because, and he went, what if I don't do it? Then it could spiral out of control. So he stopped all the staff. No one drinks, no one this. And like, that was the first thing. And that was the start of what was the Welsh.
There's no doubt about it. Before Speedo come in as Wales manager, we didn't know where we were training some days. It sounds bonkers for the team. You know, the team we are now. Speedo come in and change it all. The way we travelled.
Yeah.
The way we dressed.
Yeah.
The way we ate, the way we rehydrated, the way what we were eating before games. Everything changed. And if Speedo hadn't come in at that time, no disrespect to managers beforehand, Sparky did it as well. Sparky had that same sort of mentality playing at a big club.
Yeah.
We wouldn't see the Wales team we are now. No. He was the first to say, right, everyone plays.
Yeah.
Speedo was the first to say everyone plays from first team to under 16s. We all play the same way. Everyone's got to have a goal of playing for the first team, so they'd play the same way. And it all come from Speedo. And since the day he took the job, you know, as we've gone on, Wales have gone on to do what they've done, and it wouldn't have happened without Speedo.
Yeah. Let's bring it right up to today, Kev, obviously. Yeah. The celebrations in June when we won the Conference League, unbelievable. I felt, coming back to West Ham to start this season, I was excited. Are the players excited? Are you excited to get going again? Yeah, definitely.
I mean, look, again, I'm not on social media, and so I don't ever see this. I won't see this unless you send me it. You know what I mean? Like, and I have it on my phone. Some people might call that
a dinosaur, Kevin.
But my boy will. You know what I mean? My boy will be like, ah, Dad, you're on Ironcast yet? Ah, yeah, yeah, I've done that. Like, that was about a week ago. Oh, yeah, I've just watched it. And I'm like, oh, Sam, was it good? He go, yeah, you good, Dad. But he is my biggest fan, and he's my best mate, so he's not going to say I was bad. But yeah, look, it's just been great, you know what I mean? Being around, knowing that what you've done. And sort of what everyone's like, all people ask, isn't it, when the transfer window's open, anyone coming in? Who's coming in? Who's the next one? You know what I mean? And you're just sort of trying to play down it. But we're open that we're going to get, you know, deals done before the end of the window opens. It's a difficult time to do it because we've had probably the least amount of time, us and Man City, and Man City probably didn't come back until probably a couple of days after us. So you can see that they're probably in a similar situation of, you know, trying to get players through the door. Who do they need? But yeah, look, it's a fantastic time to be at Hammer. It's fantastic to be a part of this club. You know, I'm genuinely, like, the love I've got for the club is unbelievable. I thank, you know, David for giving me the opportunity, but I thank the owners too, because, you know, they trusted me to come back and be one of the coaches after giving me the opportunity to captain the club. So for me, it's just like, I love being here. I want to keep growing and keep getting better. And I feel this is the club to do it because of where we're going. And I'm hoping that this year, you know, with, as I say, a couple of more new additions, that we can just keep building layer on layer and getting to where this club deserves to be. And that's, you know, in the higher echelons of the Premier League. You know, we know that there's a lot of clubs who are spending big money, a lot of clubs who spend big money and it's not work for them. So we've just got to be, you know, we've got to be cautious, obviously, because we're West Ham, and make sure that we don't, you know, end up like some other clubs, what's, you know, getting points deductions and all stuff like that, or getting around that. But it's such a well-run club in that terms that, you know, we're hoping that we can just keep building, and that's what we want to do, you know, and we're working hard, you know, the boss is working hard with the owners to make sure that happens.
Yeah, brilliant. Right, we're going to end with some quick fire questions. I don't want you to think too hard about the answers, just whatever comes to mind. Okay. All right, Best moment in a West Ham shirt?
Playoff final.
Yeah.
Gotta be.
Favourite holiday destination?
Oh, Ibiza.
Oh, I thought you were going to go Benidorm.
Lanzarote.
I've got to say Ibiza because I got with me missus.
If holiday destination with the boys.
If it was Benidorm, if this wasn't going out in a couple of weeks.
Which actor's playing you in the film of your life?
Oh, ooh. Al Pacino, definitely.
Yeah.
Celebrity crush.
Careful. Can't say nothing because me missus will go mental. Yeah, okay. My celebrity crush when I said it was, and we had murder over this, so it can't be a quick fire. It was Jennifer Aniston and Kimberly Walsh. They were the two, yeah. I had a thing with Kimberly Walsh on the Saturdays, yeah. And like when she, Saturdays. Girls Aloud. And I swear down there, that nearly got me divorced. So like,
so, okay.
So you can put it out because it's a bit of banter. And anyway, yeah, I can tell you if I'm nearly divorced.
I'll text Hayley. I'll speak to Hayley.
Don't worry.
Favorite cheat meal?
Probably pizza.
Yeah. You can only listen to one music artist for the rest of your life.
Who you pick? I'm interested in this.
Oh.
What was it you and your dad used to sing all the time? There was a guy, what was he called?
It'd probably be Lionel Richie.
Lionel Richie did not see that coming.
Did you not?
No, I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting. Best film of all time?
Scarface probably, but Godfather 1 and 2 as well. So they're me three, yeah.
Best mate in football?
Tough one.
You haven't got to say me.
You can say Big Sam if you want.
To be honest, I think there's probably about a handful of footballers who I regularly keep in contact with and since me Bolton days. And they've been like my best mates anyway. You know, yeah. Ginger's one of them. Mm. I've got Nicky Hunter, Joey O'Brien. Coming back, speaking to Noel's quite a bit. Andy Carroll, to a certain extent. I haven't heard from Andy for a few months, but I'm just glad that he's playing at Reading. I don't think I've got a definitive best mate, but I've got good friends.
It's mad.
Yeah.
I know these are quick fire questions, but the amount of players we've played with over the years, you've got hundreds and hundreds of players. Lebo used to say like ships in the night.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? As in you play with all these players, but I could probably count on two hands people you'd call mates. Obviously Kev's one of them. Who you would class as a good mate these things.
And I think and that you ask any footballer that.
Yeah, I think it'll all be the same.
Yeah, I think it's the way it is, yeah.
Final question, probably the hardest one of all. What value would Kevin Nolan be worth in today's transfer market? Peak Kevin Nolan.
Prime Kevin Nolan.
How much is he getting
sold? Can I put a finger out there?
Go and throw a finger out there.
Listen, you've got goals, haven't you?
Prime Kevin Nolan. Let's be honest. Guaranteed goals, guaranteed banter.
Yeah, great club.
Great
leadership.
Skipper, leadership. I'm going £60 million.
Oh, he's saying Kevin. You haven't
valued me, I think.
He thought he was being kind.
I went 10 more than I thought as well because I didn't want to disrespect him. I'm thinking 50, you know. Oh, yeah. I go 60 because he was looking at me.
Yeah. Put him under a bit of pressure. No, I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take that. Listen, yeah. I think, you know, when you look at it now and the money what these lads are earning, and I think that was us when we were playing, we were earning incredible money, and it's just, I think there's only one way it's going, especially with the Saudi League going the way it is. But look, fair play to everyone who can make it, you know, and do it. But for me, I would have said close to 75.
Of course. Kev, thank you for your time today. Thank you for the amazing memories you provided. You're part of the rich tapestry of West Ham United. And good luck this season. Can't wait to see what we do.
Thank you, mate. Cheers. No, it's been a pleasure.
Cheers,
Always
Kev.
Great to see me, big mate there.
Wicked.
Top man.
Podcast Network.